This episode of Sessionable is brought to you by Dave's Travel and Events Group, voted Best Tour and Transport Operator in the New South Wales Tourism Awards. If you want to know why they're award-winning, why not check out one of their great beer experiences, like their half-day or full-day tours of Canberra. You know, for the longest time, Canberra has been known for two things: legal fireworks and... Oh no, I can't mention that second thing, can I? Questacon? Let's say Questacon. But it should be known for three things, really. And that third thing is its ever-expanding beer scene. So if you'd like to check out the great beers of the nation's capital, book a tour now at daves.com.au.
Sessionable.
Let's get started. Welcome to Sessionable. We're here at the Tap House today. Liam and I are here.
G'day, g'day.
And we are joined by Carlo.
Hello, everybody.
And Ben.
Hey, guys.
From New England Brewing. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, pleasure. Yeah, well, so we might just get started. Brief introduction, sort of what you guys do at the brewery and a bit about the brewery. Yeah.
Yep. I'm the owner of the brewery. Usually say sort of the boring one. Started off that I was sort of, I'm an assistant brewer and a bit of everything else, or like a bit of a brewery rouseabout. And then, yeah, look after sales and all the different things that go with it.
And I'm in all of our sales for the Sydney Basin and for Canberra, and just a general country face when the brewery needs one for various events. I know all of the back roads of the New England, so just, you know, help people when they're lost finding the place.
Local tour guide. Yeah.
Nice. And so as a brewery, what kind of what would you say is your sort of signature? What do you do? What's the brewery about?
It's probably a bit of a hard one for New England Brewing Co. I mean, our number one thing is to be a local brewery. That's what we've been doing since 2013. When we opened, 95% of the people that came into our brewery had never had a craft beer before. And that's, you know, it's just amazing to see how it changes for our highway brewery. You know, we're on the highway in a small town. Now we get heaps of people coming in and they're all chasing that next beer experience. It wasn't like that 4 years ago. You know, a lot of the people that work behind the bar, like me and my wife, feel like just complete idiots on a Saturday. It's pretty quiet. And now, you know, it's obviously, you know, happy days, but, yeah, so we're a local brewery. We get a lot of local support. We've got a lot of local taps, which is different, probably, to, you know, a lot of the guys in the capital cities obviously have local taps, but there's still a lot of rotating taps. So that's a bit of a difference. On the brewing side, most of our beers come out of open top fermenters. They're not sour beers. They're not funky beers. They're just beers that come out of open top fermenters. And that's basically because we bought our first lot of tanks from Bridge Road. And that's how Ben at Bridge Road started with open top fermentation as well. And then I suppose the second thing is, which is probably a small thing, but it's worth mentioning, is that everything we put into a can or keg is can or keg conditioned.
Yeah, cool.
So it takes, I suppose, we, with some things that do things the hard way, it adds another 10 days to our brewing process. We have to have, you know, quite a large warm room now where we, you know, hold beer at a certain temperature.
But that's very handy when, you know, you have -8 degrees in the wintertime. Yeah. It's nice having a place that's warm.
When you go to hang out to the cool room and chill down.
Because it's actually
warmer than the...
Exactly, colder in the cool room. Warmer in the cool room.
So that's one of the things. You know, we obviously bottle condition and now we can condition. I think there's another brewery in Western Australia that's definitely, I definitely know, is can conditioning. We've got really good dissolved oxygen results recently. We've got our own canning line, so we package a lot, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a week, and we're turning beer over really quickly. I think last year, and Carlo can probably, you know, back me up, we didn't sell a pale ale keg that was more than 10 days old.
Wow, that's awesome.
For the whole year.
Yeah.
And I think that's one, you know, difference between some of the breweries that have gone in with massive capacity and some of the guys, you know, that are still brewing on smaller systems. You know, we're churning out a fair bit of beer, but they're smaller batches and we're packaging more. And I think there are benefits for venues to you know, and people to know that.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome.
It was one of the big selling points that we started very early on, and we were very adamant, pushing as a brewery, at least for the 4 years that I've been with the brewery, is the idea of freshness. Like our brewer was committed to the idea that we should not be selling a beer that was any more than 3 months old unless it was designed to be sold after that point. So that's how we started 4 years ago. If something was more than 3 months old, we just wouldn't sell it. And it's now got to a place, as Ben says, where if we brew a beer, it will be out in 10 days, which is pretty sweet.
It's a good place to be in, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And particularly seasonals, like the most recent one, like our New England IPA Minutemen, that was out and on tap for most people within 2 days of it coming out of conditioning. Jeez. So
that's awesome.
We tapped it a day after we got the keg, which was 2 days after it left the brewery.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so, and I think this is a bit of an influence from Reed, our head brewer, who is American. You know, one of the biggest quality changes we made when he came to the brewery is, you know, Urella, we don't really have a major problem with ambient temperature. You know, it's never really hot. Even in summer, you know, your nights are going down to 8 degrees. But, you know, everything at the brewery is cold stored. Every single can, every single keg, and it's cold stored in warehouses, short distribution runs. So, yeah, we try to take it seriously.
Yeah. And I think that's something that, you know, we've spoken about a lot on the show. And just in general, like, the industry's moving towards that as a standard, which is awesome for everyone involved, I think. Yeah.
Well, it makes sense, you know, like if you're getting cows, milk, you know, you want to drink that
fresh
before it turns.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Like, I'm not cellaring it for 3 months before I crack it open,
exactly.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Just leaving it sitting out in the hallway for a couple of weeks.
Are you a Urella born and bred, or did you move to the area?
I'm not born and bred. Urella's only got 2,000 people, so there aren't that many born and bred locals. At any one time in Urella. But I went to uni up there, had family in the area. Sort of liked the idea of having, you know, New England Brewing Company. It's a little bit unique in Australia that it's got, and, you know, Carlo is born and bred New England. It is unique because it is a geographic region. It's politically sort of, always in the headlines for various reasons. It's sort of almost comparable to some of the, you know, sort of powerful islands within Fiji or something. We've always got a politician making noise.
It's the Basque of Australia. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And we did have our own separatist movement too.
I was going to ask.
So, yeah, there aren't really that many other places, like, you know, Riverina, but didn't really have much of a ring to it. You know, New England.
Just throwing some shade on other regions. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's pumping that separatist value.
So, yeah, it is. It's just, it's worked, like, slowly it's worked to have a brewery there. And
yeah.
But, yeah, I'm not like, local.
Yeah, it's certainly like a very parochial place, New England, and that works in our favour to a certain degree in that people like the idea of having a local beer and a local brewery and being able to put a face to the beer, as it were.
Yeah.
And so that's been terrific for us because we still move a huge amount of our product within about 200 k's of the brewery, which is excellent. It has a flip side as well, that's just if you go a little bit too far from the brewery, then people go, oh, well, this is from Urella. Well, we're from Glen Innes. Like, my hometown has 11 pubs and we can only ever be on one at a time, you know?
Yeah.
Because even when if you get on one pub, then the other pub's like, well, we don't want this beer anymore because they've got it down at the central, you know?
So, yeah, probably, like, just talking from all what I do, it's a lot different for us being in a country area as a craft brewery than being in, you know, the inner west. Most of the pubs are still all contracted, which is sort of good for us because there's a spare tap and people sort of, you know, oh, well, yeah, we'll just give it to the local guys. or Coopers as our sort of number one competitor. It's very different to being in, you know, particularly the inner west.
So why is that, that you've got that local support? Because, you know, we've spoken to so many, I don't want to say regional brewers or whatever, and they're always like, look, it's so much harder to sell to our locals than it is to anyone else, be that in, like, you know, Tumut or Port Macquarie or whatever it is. Everyone's always got that struggle. So what's different?
It's a good question, because I have noticed that with some of, you know, our other, you know, breweries that are probably similar to New England Brewing Company. I think it's probably because we are in Urala with us, and we're in our own little small town. We don't have a competing venue.
Mm. So there's no, like, pub that you really compete with, or...
Well, you know, we complement. Yeah. We've got a pub 20 metres down the road.
Yeah.
Like, we're next door neighbours. But we, you know, we complement each other. We only do food one day a week, so we're not really competing as a hospitality venue.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people have just seen that, you know, this is sort of something actually pretty good.
Yeah.
We haven't, I can't really pinpoint it. Our beer's always been pretty approachable, reliable.
Yeah.
I think as an addition to that, there is also a very strong sense of identity in New England. It's, as
Ben
mentioned before,
to drink a beer from New England.
Yeah, there's the North has a very strong sensibility of being Northern. I mean, there was in the 1960s, it tried to become its own state, and I think that's very much a product of a certain sense of almost mental isolationism, in that they see themselves as a closer unit than things from elsewhere, and that certainly works in our favour. In
you
terms
have
of people,
a bit of pride to want to start your own state as well, so you've got to be pretty happy of what you've got, right?
Yeah, exactly. People are proud of the region, and, you know, we use local grain and we use local native ingredients as well at times. And people, I think, tune into that and they go, this is a beer that I can only get from the region that I am also from. I mean, that's why I work for the brewery, because, it was the closest brewery to my hometown at the time when it opened. And I was like, well, how can I not work for this place?
Yeah, I think there's also a little bit with our brewery. It was a very, very low budget startup. It's not like a lot of the breweries now where, you know, people can see that you can have a sustainable business.
Mm-hmm.
Having a microbrewery 4 or 5 years ago, well, 6 years ago when really we started, that wasn't the case. It was really a bootstrapped business. And I think a lot of people locally sort of like to see us struggling.
Well, it's not like you're some city guy who's moved up there and just dropped a whole bunch of cash to start a brewery.
No, that's right. Yeah. You know, they've probably driven past for 2 years and sort of feeling sorry for us and then started to come in.
We should probably go in and have a beer. You know?
It's been 2 years. They're still going. We'll go in now. Yeah.
It was very left field that there was a brewery on the New England Highway.
Yeah.
All of a sudden there's like a beer being made here. It was just, you know, crazy. People used to come in, you know, and ask if they could buy cask wine.
bring their own flagons in.
People used to, like, I remember one time we were cleaning up after an event. Like, people had booked to come to the brewery, and when we were cleaning up afterwards, there were tins of Woodstock. You know, they brought their own Woodstock to a brewery.
Yeah.
It's a bit...
Got to get your woodies in, come on.
Yeah. Well, fair credit to them, you know.
Pretty different environment, but a lot of fun. And, I mean, I suppose one of the most interesting things, you know, going back to a pure beer discussion, and Carlo knows from working behind the bar at the brewery, is in summer, our most popular beer with a really diverse group of drinkers is pints of Saison.
Wow. That's awesome. That's really cool.
And I think, just, you know, to have a bit of a rant, you know, a Saison, clean, dry, crisp, and a lot of country drinkers love those flavors.
Yeah.
It's 5.5%, so there's a bit of a buzz factor.
Yeah.
And we can't, you know, our brewery door sells more Saison than anywhere else.
Yeah.
And it's because it's our farm, summer farmhouse. it sells a lot because it's a tasty beer. It's not because it's got, you know, a saison sort of, it's been stigmatized, I think, a lot craft beer venues in Australia, which it's, you know, well, I mean, we're drinking at the moment, we're drinking our Dark Farmhouse, which is a really, you know, easygoing, little bit of pepper, maybe a little bit of orange rind, dry beer, obviously, because that's what it should be, with a little hint of, you know, Belgian chocolate. Mm. You know, it's tasty, but it's not, you know, something weird and wacky.
No, but a saison doesn't have to be that. Like, a saison is just a beer for fucking farm workers. It's like, I kind of like the fact that, you know, the locals get behind it because, you know, they're rural people, right?
Yeah,
like,
there's a reason farm workers like it.
Yeah, hard-working, hard-working mofos. But, like, you know, I always say that I just don't get why saison's not more popular here, because I think saison is probably one of the best beers for the Australian climate.
Oh, absolutely.
But there's this weird stigma about wheat beers, and, you know, no one likes wheat beers in Australia. And saison, you know, it kind of falls in that category as well. So, I don't know. Yeah. I think that's fucking sick. I love it.
I've always found at venues that I've worked at, most saisons that we put on tap, just they don't move very well. And that's just you know, even if the staff are trying to say, it's just, there's a,
that's
just
right.
a weird disconnect between the style and Aussie drinkers in Sydney, at least. Mm. I don't know.
It's a funny one. That's just a little thing
that we find
because
it's huge for you guys.
Because, you know, we love the beer style. It's really well suited to our brewery.
Of course.
With the open top fermenters, we brew a, and I mean, you know, this is another point for discussion, but, you know, we brew it in, you know, what we think is a farmhouse style where it's got an unrestrained fermentation, so we just don't touch it. If it goes to 30 degrees during that fermentation for one batch, that's what happens. Yep. The next one, 28, that's what happens. It never gets cooled, basically. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so that's it's got a good story to tell. We love it. We wish we could probably sell a bit more of it, that's all.
It is always interesting, like, country drinkers, the sensibilities of country drinkers are almost always surprising in a sense. I think I think a lot of craft beer is very metropolitan focused, and they will make beer with an idea that this is what people want to drink in the city. But the sensibilities and intricacies of country palates are very, very broad and exciting. I mean, like, we did a... we used local Pilliger Desert limes to make a goza, and we were selling a keg a day out of the brewery door. You know, like, people just loved this, you know, a goza with desert limes. But we to move that in the city was a whole different experience. It was much harder to shift. Whereas like a pale ale will move, we will move one or two kegs a week in the brewery and then 10 kegs.
I think, that's another... another fun thing, you know, a lot of guys, down here have started to build relationships with local food, producers, coffee roasters.
Yeah.
We're lucky to have, and Carlo mentioned the desert limes, were actually proper desert limes, that we got from a local company called Fields Environmental Services. And they actually harvest, seeds from native trees, you know, plants. And then when we actually did, Puska, which was our, you know, Finnish style sati last year, which was, pretty, you know, very, very left field. That's, I know someone in Tasmania's done one, this year, pretty much the same sort of concept. But Fields Environmental Services, Reed gave them the specs for the trees. And then, you know, 5 hours later, after the chainsaw had, you know, been out in the paddock, we had, you know, the different types of peppermint gum that we wanted.
Yeah.
So insane. It's just
yeah,
a different,
cool. yeah.
Yeah, we don't, it's not so much an artisan coffee roaster.
Yeah. Artisan tree lopper. Yeah. That's cool. I mean, you know, I really like that it's giving the beer a sense of place as well. And I guess, you know, being, you know, where you are using open top fermentation, and it's kind of like, probably the closest you can get to terroir in beer of that sense of place and taste. And do you feel like there is a bit of Urella in the glass, or is that just getting a bit wanky?
It's certainly Urella's water.
The locals do get a bit concerned about our water supply.
What, you're using it all? Or
Well, that's becoming a problem. But, yeah, the water in Urella, it comes from a granite spring. And it has, you know, I remember, you know, my aunt and uncle's property when I was a kid, their house water came from a granite spring. It was like, oh, wow. For the first day, it was terrible, and then you were used to it.
Mm.
And all the locals in Yooralla, you just don't mention the water because it's fantastic. but to outsiders, it's not very
takes
good.
A couple of days.
From a brewing point of view, do you have to do a bit to treat the water?
The brewing water's always being adjusted. It's we filter it, you know, pretty heavily. I mean, that's sort of the size we're at. We're not really up to the stage of, you know, reverse osmosis or anything like that. But it is filtered pretty heavily, yeah.
There was a lot of fun chatter when I was in working at the brewery door there for a while because a local sheep farm had an 11 micron merino fleece, which is incredibly, that's super, super fine.
Mm-hmm.
Most super fine merino wool is about 14, right. 13. Yeah. So this was 11. And it still wasn't as fine as our filters, so it was there was a fair bit of consternation in the brewery door that afternoon.
Just imagine you pulling out the filters and comparing it to
the tool. Yeah, because I think our filters are about 9 microns or something like that.
So. But yeah, we have, you know, we did sort of inherit the open top fermenters from Bridge Road. But we have just put an order in for another double batch open top fermenter. So it's something that we want to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Our IPA and lager are both brewed in conical fermenters because it's not really – when we used to do our IPA in the open top, it was sort of softer than what it is now.
Yeah.
Now we brew a pretty straight down the line West Coast IPA. You know, you'd find a lot of other examples of it, you know, in Australia or overseas. Whereas before it was a West Coast IPA, which just had a little sort of softness from the fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
The open top fermenters, we do lose a little bit of hop aroma.
Yeah.
And we gain because a lot of the nasties just go straight out of the top of the tank.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a catch-22.
Yeah.
So we've got, you know, more open top fermenters coming. You know, it's something that we want to continue, and it's part of the story of the brewery now.
So it's kind of like it's the route you went because that's the gear you could get your hands on, and you've now really taken it to what you are.
Down on it.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, I tell a lot of people this story, but because we're doing a podcast at the moment, I was actually listening to Brews News podcast when people probably never listened to it. You know, like. Oh, well, this is in 2011.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
2011, 12.
With his listening habits. Listening before it was cool.
I was listening to it and, you know, this was when people used to advertise secondhand breweries in Australia. It just doesn't happen. Well, I mean, well, you know, Grifter just did it, but it's pretty rare. You know, we rang Ben Krause up. And he said on the podcast, you know, what are you doing at the end of the year? And Ben said, you know, I'm upgrading my brewery. So I was like, oh, I wonder if I rang him up and said, what are you going to do with the old stuff? I wonder what he'd say. So I rang him up and we ended up with all of his old brewing equipment, which, we got open top fermenters.
Awesome.
And that's basically the story.
We stick with them.
Were you kind of like, oh fuck, I don't really want this, but I need this brewery, or like?
A lot of people are very concerned about our open top fermenters.
You don't seem to be, so I'm not too worried about it. Yeah,
it's sort of, you know, like, just don't really get why we would do it. Which is probably still a pretty good question, but you know, it's sort of. That story to tell and some of the beer styles, you know, hopefully, particularly the Belgian styles are coming through pretty well. Hopefully people appreciate that. But I mean, the thing sort of on the brewery floor side, for people listening, you know, we have to have more conditioning tanks to match up with those fermenters, because we can't, you know, they're not in a enclosed uni tank, so it's got to go somewhere when it's finished fermenting. So we have, for a small brewery, we've got, you know, a lot of tanks, compared to someone else the same size.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have as many tanks as us. So there are differences. Yep. If you're ever coming through Eurelli, just come and have a look.
Come and join it, yeah.
The one opportunity I had, I was going to go up with you. I ended up having to go overseas and missed the bloody trip.
So that's right.
I'm very, very keen to come check out the brewery. But yeah, do you want to take a quick break? Because my glass is empty.
Yeah, let's fix that.
I would like another beer.
Cool.
Sessionable.
The Hunter Valley is well known for its wine, but did you know that there's a growing beer scene there as well? A great way to check out the awesome beer and breweries in the Hunter Valley is to get on a brewery tour. Fortunately, Dave's Travel and Events Group offers such a tour. On their appropriately named Hop Hunter Tour, you'll visit breweries new and old and find out why the Hunter Valley is not just about wine. To book your tour today, check out daves.com.au.
Cool, and we're back.
Back. Sorry, my beer ran out, so I was
getting, we have to fix that.
It happens. So, yeah.
But we do have a new beer in front of us.
We do.
What have we got, boys?
Yeah, what are we drinking?
So this is our 2017 Big Holiday. So this is a vintage brew. So it's six months old now. So this is a Belgian golden ale that we brew with a little bit of orange peel and pepper berry.
Nice.
It's quite a big beer. It's 8.6%, so it does pack a punch. But what is interesting about this is we use an Abbey yeast for this particular beer. So because we're, again, using open-top fermentation, it gives us this advantage in that we brew a what we call startup beer, which last year was the Pusk. Which yeast do we use? What beer do we use the yeast for last year?
Because we brew a high-gravity Big Holiday or Big Winter each year, we usually brew a starter beer before it. But
and I can't think of what it was last year.
Is that to help
the strawberries?
It was the raspberries.
Exactly. So it gets the yeast fired off, which means that then we can brew this, which is, again, has no temperature conditioning, no temperature control.
Yeah.
We just let the yeast do its work. And the reason we do that pilot beer is the first times we were doing this, the yeast would get really active and hungry, but it wasn't quite getting to where we wanted the yeast to be, the gravity.
So as in you weren't getting enough of those like esters and phenols and all those yeast characteristics coming through? Or?
Yeah, just the fermentation just wasn't quite as healthy as what we would want.
Yeah.
Can get a bit shocked pitching a yeast, into such a high gravity beer. So, yeah, we just play it safe.
Mm.
And so the result of that is you get this beer, which now this is 6 months since the last time I had it, which was at Christmas time. We brew in the winter, the big winter, and at the summer, the big holiday. Just once a year we do this special one-off beer. This is sat for 6 months, and you can tell just immediately there is a real like effervescence almost to it. Like, it's incredibly crisp beer. It has really mellowed somewhat from...
It has really rounded out. Like, you know, there is booze there, but it's not harsh. It's really velvety and... It's really delicate, but big at the same time.
Like, it's a tricky one. The 8.6%, like a good Belgian style, should not
be
come
present.
Through
yeah.
whatsoever.
Yeah.
And hopefully, that's what you get.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really lovely. Pepper berries in a beer is great when you're using a beer that has a yeast that has a particular phenolic quality because you're going to boost all of that. And the orange peel is the same in terms of those esters. So we pull both of those flavors out. It's like quite a, not to, you know, blow our own trumpet too much, guys, but, you know, it is quite a well-balanced beer in terms of the additives and the way that they're being used.
And I think if you look at that style of, you know, your brewery setup, it's probably more along the lines of like a traditional Belgian brewery, a Belgian Abbey brewery that would have been brewing these beers. And so
it
translates really well, I think.
And it's also the time of the year that we release this, it blends so perfectly. I mean, you can taste that and you can go, you can see the things that you would put with that, you know, like it would go really well. Butterscotch pudding goes
turkey.
Every year I take a bottle of this, I ride my bicycle, like it's about 22.5 k's to get to Farrakhan from Glen Innes. And I put a bottle of this in my backpack and I ride out to a friend of the brewery's, Brian Winter, who's a local pumpkin grower in Farrakhan. And
you guys have all the hookups. This is sick.
Brian Winter is responsible, I think, for putting our beer into Glen Innes. Like, he used to just come and buy it in bulk and then distribute it along the Farrakhabad Valley. So all these farmers are just hooked on particularly Little Ram. They love Little Ram because they can, you know, work a tractor, come in at lunch and have a little ram and then get back on a tractor. But Brian Winter has just pushed us out there. So I ride my bike out to Brian Winter and we have Christmas cake and big holiday. Nice. Whatever that year's vintage is.
Yeah, yeah.
And occasionally I'll have a bottle from the year before or what have you, and then we'll have the two together. And
it's a slow ride home after that, yeah.
You normally, you call someone. but, you know, it's that kind of beer, you know. It's for those warm, particularly New England summers, so... It's almost Sydney winter, our summer temperature, you know,
it's still short
25
sweater,
degrees.
Yeah.
But those afternoons where you can just have a very heavy beer that's going to just settle you for the
set
Christmas
right.
night.
Yeah, know? Yeah.
So what's coming up for New England? What's in the... you said you've got the new big tank coming in. Any other sort of growth or cool stuff coming up?
Well, I mean, we've grown pretty... organically, I suppose. Yeah. Putting in our own canning line has grown things a lot. You know, compared to other breweries, we're only packaging about 20% of our beer. And so we sort of really needed to do something about it. So the cans have helped out. We've got a few new tanks coming. Really just trying to do what we do, you know, as well as we can, basically,
is what
we're trying to do at the moment. We're not really trying to break records.
Organic growth is the best way to do it, right?
Yeah, it's just being sort of sustainable and trying to have happy people.
I think just by, like, seeing the beers around in Sydney, like, that going into cans, I think, was this point where I just started seeing the beers around
more often. Pretty good. And I think, you know, we're very lucky to have a head brewer and a brewery team that can pull out really high quality seasonal beers every month. You know, everyone's, you know, everyone really admires that.
Yeah.
It's not easy to do to nail core range and to do, seasonal releases all the time. And then on the other hand, you know, we've got the guys on the ground making sure that we actually get the beer out there and it's ticking over and it's fresh. So, going into cans was a big thing. Doing the 500 mil seasonal releases, labeled silver bullets hadn't really been, you know, things are moving so quickly in Australia now, but really mid last year, there weren't that many breweries releasing 500 mil silver bullet with a 2/3 label on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was, you know, some of the first ones came out of Urella, really.
Yeah.
So a lot of people are doing it now. Western Australia, there are probably people doing it before it was happening over here. But
of course, Modus here in Sydney as well.
Exactly. So, a lot of, you know, I suppose that's one thing about having your own, having your own canning line. You've got that flexibility.
And we've got some fun beers coming up as well. Like, following on from our sort of Gab success last year, we did a smoked beer. Last year, we smoked malts on Australian hardwoods.
So good.
So we've smoked some more malt this year on Coastal Ironbark, which is...
Wow.
I mean, Ironbark is incredible because it has such a peppery aroma, the smoke.
Yeah.
I'm not very familiar with Coastal Ironbark. I'm imagining, it, like most coastal species, it's probably a little lighter in that peppery content. But anyway, so We've smoked some malts on that, and we've added mango puree, so we're going to have a smoked mango beer.
Oh, wow. Yum. Yum.
Yep. Mango smoke, it'll... Yeah. There's a keg going to the tap house when that's the first sale.
You just locked in an order right now.
No, they don't have to describe the beer to me. The order's locked in already. Like,
Tom has a standing order with us.
You have to take a keg of everything. I'm good.
Yeah.
So, that'll definitely be a fun one. We've got...
coconut and lime.
Yeah, coconut and lime, sort of semi-hazy IPA after that. India Brown coming out in October, which is probably my favourite India style, because you can get a little bit of sort of malt sweetness in there. Not like an India Black, which is really just coloured black.
Yeah.
So India Brown's a big favourite for all of us. Then we're going to have a re-release of Ship in a Bottle, which we did last year, with some really cool German hops and a big lemony saison yeast.
Yum.
Cool.
So that's in November, and then December, back to big holiday.
Awesome.
End of the year.
Brew team's got a bit to do then. Yeah,
race through some recommendations.
Yeah, I think we're getting the roundup because you guys have got some stuff to do. But
cool. Well, do you want to go
non-beer recommendations?
First? Sweet, I'm ready to go.
All right, go.
Cool. I just went out and picked one of these up today. It's the classic Super Nintendo mini system. Okay. It's like as big as it's tiny.
Couple of phones.
It fits in your hand. Like it's so small. It's got like 20 games on it, all classic like SNES games, and it's really cool. Like that's
awesome.
Yeah, I was playing a bit of Super Mario World earlier today. It was
So I nearly wet my pants yesterday when I discovered that the Almighty Wu-Tang Clan are playing at the Opera House in December.
Oh, wow!
And they're playing three nights only. Any shows in Australia, and they're doing their first album, Into the 36 Chambers, all the way through. And so my recommendation is A, listen to Wu-Tang Clan, and B, get some tickets to the Opera House show. Because I just think seeing like the ruckus of the Wu-Tang family in the Opera House is probably the most funniest thing. So I just want to see how the stewards deal with the fans would be pretty amazing. But yeah.
What about you guys? Got some...
My partner last year for my birthday got me a cutthroat razor. And I cannot recommend it enough. Like, honestly.
Nice.
When you think about these things, they last you forever. Like, my friend is using his grandfather's one. It's just sensational. Like, I kind of costed it out. I used to be spending about $20 every 3 months on razor blades. And now I've got one thing for the rest of my life.
Boom.
I love it.
Don't become a sales rep. Count the cost of razors.
Yeah. Yeah, things aren't doing so well.
I was counting the cost of razors, and I just decided to not shave.
Bought a forge, and I forged my own razor blade, guys.
I like how you recommend three guys with beards at the moment as well. Yeah. No, that's an awesome one.
I'll go back to a foodie one, because I thought everyone would have a foodie one, but they didn't. We've got one local butcher that sells Jack's Creek beef.
Yeah.
In Tamworth, it's 450-day grain-fed steaks. It's not very environmentally friendly, but
it tastes fucking good.
You can find it.
Nice.
Awesome.
Beer?
Yeah, you got something?
Yeah, sure. I had a can of this. It was, I think it's brewed at Frenchie's. It's called the, but not by Frenchie's. It was a winner of a homebrew competition, I think. The Nine Finger Brew.
Smoke on the Porter.
Smoke on the Porter.
Yeah.
Mm. So tasty. Like, just, I had a can of it. It was given to me, and I was at home watching TV, and I had it, and it was gorgeous, beautiful.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is a sensational beer. I was tossing out whether or not to say Smoke on the Porter myself.
Yeah. I snaked you. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a homebrew comp winner, right?
I think so. Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool.
Awesome. My one, I'm going to go... Actually, I went to Source Brewery the day with Spinger Saisons, and they had their Super Saison on.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, just anyone who's brewing a Saison, I'm always going to have a crack because I love my Saisons. And that was really bloody good.
Beautiful.
Fine of that. On a Friday afternoon, and that went down very well. Yeah,
nice.
Well, now that Smoke and the Porter is out of the mix. Thank you, Tom.
Sorry, mate.
You invite me on your podcast, and you throw me under the bus right at the last
Why do you think he always goes first?
I'm going to say, actually, another brewery close to us, Deepwater Brewery. I was in Glen Innes the other day, and I tried their Imperial Stout, and it is just a sensational beer. Sensational
awesome.
From okay. Deepwater Brewing.
Mm. Awesome.
Beautiful.
Yeah, you've put me on the spot a bit with the beers.
Yeah, sorry.
I can't.
You can recommend them.
We're in a small town a long way away from bottle shops.
There's no rule against recommending.
Samples, what's going on?
But yeah, I will. You mentioned the sauce saison, and I did have that a little while ago, and it was pretty good.
Nice.
Yeah. Right, you backed me up with the sauce saison. Lovely.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. Well, thanks for joining us, guys.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah.
And
yeah, thanks.
Yeah, well, I think that wraps us up for this episode.
Cheers, guys. All right, cool. Let's go.
Bye.
Cheers.